old friend of mine. I'm very old. I knew I'd get barracking from him. So we go back to when he was leading youth in the church we were at, and we owe him a lot because he nurtured our kids through some difficult times. He used to come with Orangina. So my, do you know that drink? You don't see much of it now, do you? So I think it was French, wasn't it? But it's a popular orange drink. And my Julia, who was a little one in those days, she said, Orangina, man. It's the Orangina man. So here's the Orangina man. Here he is.
Morning, everybody. I'm hoping I have a bit more success with a clicker today than I have in the past. So let's see how we go on. I just wonder if, do you guys know what TripAdvisor is? If you don't know what TripAdvisor is, then it's a review site online where you can review holiday destinations, you can review restaurants, you can review experiences and places, you can say what's the best 10 things to do in a particular place. And what I want to do is I want to start by reading out some reviews from foreign holidays. So the first one, okay. I think it should be explained in the brochure that the local store does not sell proper biscuits like custard creams or ginger nuts. It's lazy of the local shopkeepers to close in the afternoons. I often needed to buy things during siesta time. This should be banned. The beach was too sandy. A guest at a hotel in Australia complained his soup was too thick and strong. It turns out he was inadvertently slurping the gravy. No one told us there would be fish in the sea. The children were startled. We went on holiday to Spain and had a problem with the taxi drivers as they were all Spanish. One person submitted a review of the iconic Abbey Road in London. I was told to check out the zebras crossing Abbey Road whilst in London, but didn't see any. Perhaps you have to come at night to see them. There were lots of people there looking for them, but they didn't see a single one. I'd recommend London Zoo at Regent's Park over Abbey Road for zebras. It took us 9 hours to fly home from Jamaica to England. It only took the Americans 3 hours to get home, which isn't fair. My fiancé and I booked a... twin-bedded room, but we were placed in a room with a double bed. We now hold you responsible for the fact that I find myself pregnant. This would not have happened if you'd put us in the room that we booked. I wonder what a TripAdvisor review would say if those who are in heaven could write a review of heaven and of God. There wouldn't be a single review that gives less than top marks in every single category. No one would write a review saying, yeah, heaven's all right, but my 2 weeks in Benidorm was better. They would say how heaven is more amazing than you can imagine. The food, the colours, the vibrancy of the place will make you feel as if whilst you were living here on earth, you were just living in black and white. And about God, no one would write a review saying, yeah, he's great, but he can be a bit grumpy in the morning before he's had a coffee. They would all say how God is better than we can possibly imagine. He is a perfect father. He is kinder, wiser, more loving, more creative, more amazing in every way. He can outsmart any genius. He can out-strategize the smartest tactician without breaking a sweat. And he can and will work all things together for the good of those who love him. that he will see his kingdom come, and he will see his will be done despite the opposition of every demon or devil, every Hitler, every Putin, every God-hater, or any other person in history past or yet to come. And he is so committed to his plans and such a genius that he can even weave in all our stumbles, our missteps, our stubbornness, our daft ideas into what he's doing to establish his kingdom. And if only we could grasp now what we will see more clearly one day, how he is so much better than we are able to grasp, and how much kinder he is, how much more loving, and how thoroughly committed he is to each of us, and what a complete and utter genius he is. Next slide, please. This is one of Bill Johnson's most famous quotes. "I can't afford to have thoughts in my head about me that God doesn't have in his." And nor can you. There are so many voices trying to express an opinion to you. There's so many things the devil wants you to think. But you need to hear what God is saying about you. That's the opinion you need to have. What you think about God is the most important thought you will ever have. Because it affects everything. It affects how you do life and how you interpret life and everything going on around you. Next slide. In Romans, it says, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." If you fill your heart and mind with God's truth and what he says about something, your perspective is going to change. And you'll start to see your circumstances the way he does. And it means when you feel overwhelmed and your feelings are telling you that you're alone and abandoned, you'll know that isn't the full story. You'll know that he's with you and he's for you. See, feelings may make great servants, but they're lousy masters. God has a perspective about you and your circumstances that is full of life and hope. I want to know how he sees things, because that is the only perspective that is actually worth having. And one of the values that we have here is that God is faithful and he's kind and he's good. I want to thank everybody who's brought a contribution this morning, because you have paved the way for me in what I want to speak. So thank you. But it's not just that. In fact, we don't just believe that God is good. We believe he is good all the time. Now, I know that that is something that some Christians will struggle with, and actually it can be quite hard to hear. How can it be the case that when life is hard and painful and it hurts, that God is good all the time? I understand that. Years ago, we were in church with a lady called Claire. She had a son called Charlie, and she stood up one Sunday and gave a testimony of something God had done. And we kind of related a fair amount to Claire, because she had a son who needed to be in a special needs school environment, and our youngest is in a special needs school environment. And she stood up and she'd been fighting for months to get him into the right school placement. And she'd had doors closed. No, 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 no. And she kept praying. And she stood up and she said, "I want to give testimony about the faithfulness of God. We've heard this week. Charlie's got into the school that he needs." And she said, "I want to thank God for his faithfulness." And in that moment, God said to me, "You know what? I was faithful to her before she saw that answer. I was faithful to her months ago. I was just getting it ready. And that's what it's like with the goodness of God. We do experience loss and grief, and sometimes pain can be so intense that it's overwhelming. And yet, the Bible speaks of a God of comfort, a loving Father who treasures his children, cares for them, leads them and guides them. Deuteronomy 31 says that the Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Psalm 23 says that even when I'm walking through the darkest valley or the valley of the shadow of death, he is with me and will comfort me. Psalm 27 says that God is a fortress protecting my life, so I have no need to be frightened of anything. Psalm 34 says that God is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Psalm 46 says that God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Psalm 73 says that my flesh may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Psalm 119 says that may his unfailing love be your comfort. Psalm 147 says that he heals the brokenhearted. Isaiah 54 says that though the mountains be shaken and the hills removed, his unfailing love for you will not be shaken. Jeremiah 29 says that God knows the plans he has for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Jeremiah 31 says that God has loved us with an everlasting love and drawn us with unfailing kindness. In Matthew 11, Jesus says that those who are weary and burdened should come to him and he will give them rest. In 1 Peter 5, it says we should throw all our anxiety on him because he cares for us. And I love that idea of throwing our anxiety onto him. You take it, God, because I can't handle it anymore. And as if God whispers back, I've been waiting for you to do that because you were never meant to carry that alone. And in Revelation 21, it says that a day is coming when he will wipe away every tear. There'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. Now, this may be stating the absolute obvious, but these passages about God being a comfort and a refuge in times of trouble tell us there will be times when we need comfort and a refuge in times of trouble. There is nothing in the Bible that tells us we won't experience hard times. Walking with Jesus is no guarantee that life will be easy. But the Bible does say that what we gain by following Jesus is a price worth giving everything for. So, where are we going this morning? So what I want to touch on, if you haven't figured out already, is how do we cope when life is painful? There are many dysfunctional and destructive ways that people use to try and cope with pain. Alcohol abuse, drug abuse, self-harm, negative self-talk, curry, quiche. Don't go there, people. It's not going to add anything good to your life. Bitterness, refusing to forgive, pornography, isolating yourself from loved ones and pushing people away, taking your pain out on others, drink driving, toxic relationships. It's a long list. But if God made us to do life with him, how would he have us walk through tough and painful times when they come? Because if he's good, he must have a better way for us, a way that sustains us rather than is destructive. And as I've been preparing for today, I keep coming back to the story of Joseph. Not the carpenter Joseph, the other one. Now, you know the one I mean, so join in when you can, okay? I close my eyes. drew back the curtain. Oh, Jesus. You might not know much about Joseph, and you might just remember a few things from school, that he went to Egypt, he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams about some fat cows and some thinny cows, and he helped prepare and get everybody ready for a famine, and he had a fabulous coat. But you may not know some of the tough and painful things that he went through. When he was young, God gave him dreams about the future, which he shared with his family. Now, most of his brothers already hated him because he was his father's favourite. So sharing of these dreams didn't go down particularly well, especially because it involved them, him being more important than them. They detested him so much that once when the brothers were out looking after the sheep, he went to see them and they decided they were going to kill him. And what they did is they threw him down a dry well. I wonder if you can imagine the conversation that he has with God. Hey, God, do you remember? You gave me some dreams about doing some great things. Well, I'm in a hole and my brothers want to kill me. Even if I get out of this hole, they want to kill me. God says, I know. You're exactly where I need you to be. I'm in a hole and they're going to kill me. They didn't kill him, in case you were wondering. But they saw some travellers, and so they sold Joseph to them as a slave. And as the story goes on, things start to get a bit better for him. But then he's accused of attempted rape, and he's thrown into prison. So, can you imagine the conversation he's having with God? Hey God, do you remember those dreams you gave me about doing great things? Well, I'm in prison with no way out, so those dreams are dead. I'm going to die in here. Hi, Joseph. You're exactly where I need you to be. Did you not hear what I said? I'm in prison. There is no chance I'll get out. I'm going to die in here. Eventually, two new prisoners arrive. One's the king's baker, and the other is the king's cupbearer. They both have dreams, and Joseph is able to interpret them and tell them what those dreams mean. And things come to pass exactly as Joseph said they would. Now, one of them, who's the king's cupbearer, is released. And as he is, Joseph says, please don't forget me. But he does. And 2 years go by. Can you imagine the next conversation with God? Hey, God, I'm still here. I'm still in prison. I'm still going to die here. You gave me the understanding of that cupbearer's dream and it came true. You blessed him, and now he's out, serving the king, living a great life, while I'm still here. I had a dream too, you know. Not that anything has come of it, of course. I'm stuck in this prison where I'm going to die. Have I mentioned that? If that wasn't bad enough, you rubbed my face in it by giving someone else a dream, which I helped him understand, which then came true. I was here first, you know. What about me? Hi, Joseph. You're exactly where I need you to be. And then one night, Pharaoh had a dream. And everything changed. Joseph had to deal with circumstances that were difficult and painful, that would have been hard, really hard. He even saw God working through him to touch others while still stuck himself. That would have been hard. Maybe you can relate to that. And yet, through it all, God hadn't forgotten him or forsaken him. God was at work. It's just like that song we sometimes sing. Even when I can't see it, you're working. Even when I don't feel it, you're working. Even in the darkest moments, God was with him and God was working. Through everything that he went through, all the pain, all the disappointment and confusion, God was at work on Joseph's behalf, putting everything in place. Some of us may have known times where things have been so tough that we feel we're stuck in a hole or we're in some kind of prison. We might feel like there's no way out and the pain is overwhelming. And maybe that describes where you're at today. He is good. You can trust him. You may not understand what is going on, but you can trust him. It might look dark and like there's no way out, but you can trust him. It may look like what he said will not come to pass, but you can trust him. You may be in the most intense pain, but you can trust him. He is with you and he's for you, and no circumstance has him confused or scratching his head wondering what to do. He's not struggling to come up with a solution. And there is no situation that is beyond his ability to turn it around. We may only see a small part of what is going on, but he's got you. He's got you. And in the mystery and confusion, he asks you to trust him. He is for you, and he will never leave you. You may not have a clue what is going on, but he's at work and he's got you. Now, I know that there's a tension that comes from going through something painful and not knowing what is going on, what God is up to, or how you're going to keep going. And the way to live with that tension that comes from that is to grasp that he can be trusted and then choose every day, I'm trusting you, God, today. I'm trusting you, God, today. I'm hoping this will work now. Oh, can you put the next slide up, please? Psalm 62 says, trust in the Lord at all times, you people. Pour out your hearts to him, for God is our refuge. Trust in the Lord at all times. All times. All times. All times. Do me a favour and put the next slide up, please. Years ago, I came across a poem called Footprints, some of you may have heard. So I'm going to read it to you. It says, one night a man had a dream. He dreamed he was walking across the beach with the Lord. Across the sky flashed scenes from his life. For each scene, he noticed two sets of footprints in the sand. One belonged to him, the other to the Lord. When the last scene of his life flashed before him, he looked back at the footprints in the sand. He noticed that many times along the path of his life, there was only one set of footprints. He also noticed that it happened at the very lowest and saddest times of his life. This really bothered him, and he questioned the Lord about it. Lord, you said that once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I've noticed that during the most troublesome times in my life, there is only one set of footprints. I don't understand why, when I needed you most, you would leave me. The Lord replied, my precious, precious child, I love you. And I would never leave you. During your times of trial and suffering, when you see that only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. Now, can you go to the next slide, please? So that's a nice picture, isn't it? Can you go to the next slide, please? Google's a fascinating thing, and you can go down some real rabbit holes, can't you, by Googling stuff. So when I was looking for that footprints, I found alternative footprints. So here's one. One night I had a wondrous dream. One set of footprints there were seen. The footprints of my precious Lord, but mine were not along the shore. But then some stranger prince appeared. And I asked, Lord, what have we here? There's prints are large and round and neat, but Lord, they are too big for feet. My child, he said in somber tones, for miles I carried you alone. I challenged you to walk in faith, but you refused and made me wait. You disobeyed, you would not grow. The walk of faith you would not know. So I got tired, I got fed up, and there I dropped you and dragged you along on your butt. Doesn't end there. Can you put the next slide up? Can you read that? One time I hid you in that little sand hole while I got a hot dog. Let me try and put this another way. Could you put the next slide up, please? That's our youngest, Louis, taken a few years ago. The reason we are in that pose is that at that age, he was a real wriggler. But there was no way I was going to lose my grip on him. Some of you are wrigglers. He's never going to lose his grip on you. Can you put the next slide up, please? When life is hard, this is what you need. Now, let me be clear. What I'm not saying is you need to cuddle my wife. Okay? Let's just get that clear. I could just see a queue of people at the end of the service queuing up to cuddle my wife. This is what we need with him. And this is not just when things are hard. This should be a lifestyle. I wonder what that picture says to you. What does being held like that communicate? It's okay. I'm here. I've got you. I bet most of the parents in this room have had a time when they've said that to a child in pain at some point. Now, you may not have explained to them the reason for the pain, and most of the time the explanation itself doesn't bring any kind of comfort. But for a child hearing, "It's okay, I'm here, I've got you," changes everything for them. Brings them comfort and it helps them. And it's as if, as parents, it's in our DNA that we just somehow know that saying that will help them. And maybe you've said that dozens of times to your children. Have you ever stopped long enough to let him speak those words over you when you're hurting? Because really, that's what you need to hear as well. It's okay. I'm here. I've got you. In Old Testament, in Samuel chapter 12, it says that when David's baby son died, his response was to go to the house of the Lord and worship. And I suspect there are very few things that hurt as much as the death of a child, but in that intense pain, he went and worshipped. If you don't know God, that just seems like a loony thing to do. But if you love Jesus, it makes perfect sense. As a family, we've had a tough few weeks. And about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was in the kitchen doing the washing up. Yes, I was doing the washing up, so just... I had the kitchen to myself, and I just started to cry, just feeling a sense of grief over some stuff. And I put on some music, and I put my worship playlist on, and I just put it on random. And I'm sure that the Holy Spirit likes to mess with those things. And a song came on. And I just stopped doing what I did finish it, but I stopped doing the washing up. And I just started to worship. There were tears coming down my face. And it hurt. But I just started to worship. And it was as if he lifted me up. And he wrapped his arms around me. And he says, I know this hurts, but I've got you. And at the end of it, the pain was still there, but I felt a little lighter. And maybe as I've been speaking, things are getting stirred for you. And I'm about to finish, but we do want to make space for people who would like to pray with somebody. But before we do, what we're going to do is we're going to put on a song. And Stephen has got this lined up. And if we can have it loud so that people can sing it with gusto, what I'm going to do is invite you to stand. But what I want is, if you are in a difficult place, is start to worship him, because he will meet with you, and he is the one that you need in every circumstance in life, but especially when you're going through a difficult time. He is the one you need. So can I invite everybody to stand and join me? If you would like prayer, then please do come up to the front afterwards. But we're going to stop now, and we're just going to worship along with this. So if you can crank it up and play it, that'd be great. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.